A cloud of smoke from a distant explosion rising above a city, a line of tanks, civilians, including two young girls, hurrying along a road.
When Russia attacked Ukraine last year, senior members of the conservative government were quick to condemn Vladimir Putin.
If we're paying in our energy bills for the evils of Vladimir Putin, the people of Ukraine are paying in their blood.
If we allow Vladimir Putin to succeed, it will cause untold misery across Europe.
But some accuse successive Tory governments of emboldening Russia in the years leading up to the invasion.
I am a Russophile, a committed Russophile.
We were very, very naive and complacent in the way that we dealt with Russia.
The UK government had an appeasement policy towards Putin.
Were warnings about Putin's malign intentions ignored?
Just before he was poisoned, my husband said, if you don't stop Mr. Putin, who is like Hitler, he will start a war.
This is the story of how Russia sought to influence British politics.
The Russians suggested a sort of strip club style venue where girls would be scantily dressed, serving drinks, doing who knows what.
The term is kompromat for a reason. It's compromising material. You know, we've got this tape of you in the strip club.
It's also the story of how the Conservative Party accepted millions from Russia-linked donors.
The money had bounced around multiple bank accounts, back into the UK, and then to the Tory Party.
Russian money has eaten quite deeply into the British establishment, and that is regrettable.
So was Britain's national security put at risk.
The writing was on the wall in letters 50 foot high about what Putin would do if we didn't take strong action.
Russian interference became the new normal because we allowed it to happen.
Strippers, spies and Russian money, Channel 4 dispatches, narrator Caroline Katz, hashtag dispatches. London, 2004. Big Ben bathed in a warm glow at night.
For many in Westminster, more than a decade after the end of the Cold War, the threat from Russia was seen as a low priority. But the number of Russian spies in London remained at Cold War levels, as one Tory politician was about to discover. Conservative Party chairman Greg Hands was then an aspiring MP, campaigning hard in the run-up to the 2005 general election.
I was knocking on doors, meeting people, going to events, working full-time to try and win that seat for the Conservatives. And there was this event at the Russian embassy, set up through a young Conservative sort of donor club. Thought, yes, I'll go to that. I've got an interest in Russia. My wife is half Russian. Guest speaker was Boris Johnson. I do remember the Russian ambassador making a joke when he said that when I saw the name Boris, I thought he might be one of ours.
At the party, he met a man who said he worked for the Russian embassy. This is the first time Greg Hands has spoken publicly about that meeting.
A youngish man introduced himself as Alexander Kashitsyn, gave me his card. I said, I'm the parliamentary candidate for Hammersmith and Fulham for the Conservatives. And he said, oh, I live in Fulham. So I said, look, get in touch with me if you ever need anything in Fulham.
It wasn't long before Alexander Kashitsyn took him up on his offer.
He phoned me in the following week and said he'd like to meet up. We eventually met in the Seven Stars pub. First, he said that he wanted to talk about street sweeping or bin collection. And then suddenly he'd asked me to get him a document about the Iranian nuclear program in the House of Commons library. Well, I was very suspicious. So I said to him, I'm just a parliamentary candidate. I don't have access to the House of Commons library. And I left. And as I was leaving, I think, now that is a very strange thing to do.
Greg Hands reported his suspicions to the Foreign Office.
I thought that he was a Russian intelligence officer getting a soon-to-be British Member of Parliament to do something for the Russian state. This is a classic kind of sort of espionage technique. You get somebody to steal something or get you a document that is easy to get. Not that you need the document, but the idea is to test somebody's willingness to do something for you. That's essentially what I think the technique is.
The River Thames.
In 2006, MI5 officers asked to meet Greg Hands over lunch.
So, Mr. Hands, your phone number has cropped up on the phone of a Russian intelligence operative. And I said, oh, you must be talking about Mr. Alexander Kashitin. They were keen, obviously, to find out what a connection Kashitin had made with Member of Parliament. So they said to me, that, look, we've got a real problem here. There's a lot of people like Kashitin in London who were up to no good, trying to infiltrate different things, meet different people, and were very, very active.
There's a time when there was a tendency to turn a blind eye to the extent to which Russia's general espionage networks were starting to crank up again. You have to remember that this was a time when the West's focus, when the United Kingdom's focus, was very much on counter-terrorism, on Afghanistan and on Iraq.
The threat posed by Moscow's agents in London was about to become clear, with a deadly attack on a Russian former intelligence officer who had fled to the UK.
Alexander Litvinenko, the former KGB colonel, is tonight fighting for his life under armed guard.
It was midnight of 1st of November when he became very sick. He couldn't breathe properly. He started to lose his hair. Day before his death, polonium-210 radioactive material was discovered. We were British citizens, and Sasha was killed on a British soil in London. Scotland Yard found two suspects, Andrei Lugovoy and Dmitry Kovtun. Sasha met 1st of November in Millennium Hotel. Just weeks before he was poisoned, he published an article when he just said, if you don't stop Mr. Putin, who is like Hitler, he will start a war.
Intelligence officer Christopher Steele, one of MI6's foremost experts on Russia, was at the heart of the investigation.
Well, the poisoning of Litvinenko showed that the Russian state was prepared to carry out what in any other guise would be called a terrorist operation on British soil involving nuclear substances. It was a deeply shocking event which portended a very disturbing regime and relationship going forward.
A cordoned off area.
The murder led to a deep political rift between the then Labour government and the Kremlin.
Belgrave Square in Westminster.
But Britain continued to welcome Putin-linked Russians to settle here, under a special visa scheme for the super-rich. And some used their wealth to make friends at the heart of British society.
Russian interference became the new normal because we allowed it to happen. We deliberately facilitated the arrival of Russian businessmen to come and invest in this country.
One oligarch with a home here was Putin ally Oleg Deripaska, once Russia's richest man. In 2008, he met Conservative Shadow Chancellor George Osborne and Labour former minister Peter Mandelson on his super yacht in Corfu. When it was alleged that Osborne had solicited a £50,000 donation from the billionaire, it caused a political scandal.
Well, a very specific allegation has been made that we solicited a donation from Mr. Deripaska. And I want to make it absolutely clear that we neither asked for money nor did we receive money.
Just to clarify then, did you discuss it with other people, with third parties, the possibility of a donation from this Russian billionaire?
Political parties are offered donations, sometimes by intermediaries, all the time. I'm not going to go into a detailed running commentary of all the offers that are made to us.
George Osborne would go on to become the second most powerful man in the Conservative government.
Cars coming into Downing Street.
In 2010, Britain had a new prime minister. Despite the troubled relationship between Britain and Russia, David Cameron made it clear he wanted closer relations and more trade.
I accept that Britain and Russia have had a difficult relationship for some time, but I want to make the case this morning for a new approach based on cooperation.
I think there was an acceptance by David Cameron, George Osborne, that flows of money and trade and everything else with these sort of regimes was something that was probably desirable and necessary for British jobs and British prosperity. I would argue that was a very short-sighted view of the situation.
In London, Russian diplomats were quick to capitalise on Cameron's new approach. At the forefront was the son of a KGB general. Sergei Nalobin was first secretary at the Russian embassy and would go on to head up political affairs, mixing with senior politicians. Media reports later accused him of being a spy.
Nalobin, he was sort of shortish, fattish, baldish, and very young. So he was 30, I think, when I met him.
Nalobin approached Conservative fundraiser Sergei Christo. Born in Russia, he's been a British citizen since 2000.
He was very persistent. He kept ringing me on my mobile phone. And eventually we met.
Christo says Nalobin made him a proposal.
He told me, I know some Russian companies that are interested to give money to the Conservative Party.
Christo was worried that if those companies weren't registered in the UK, it would be illegal for them to make political donations.
I got quite spooked because I thought he was trying to corrupt the political system of the UK.
Christo was so concerned about Nalobin's proposal, he contacted MI5 and asked them to investigate him.
I decided to go to the security services and I rang. After about, I don't know how many calls, maybe 10 or so, they finally met me.
But he says MI5 weren't interested.
The fact that they didn't advise me to go to police, I think indicates that themselves they were not interested or didn't want to pursue this for some reason.
MI5 declined to comment. Sergei Christo says Nalobin also had another idea.
He did ask me in passing, why won't we organize a Conservative Friends of Russia group to develop contacts, to convince people that Russia is misunderstood, that in fact it's not what people paint it, and that the regime is not, I don't know, corrupt, is not as evil as people make, as journalists make out. And I responded to him that normally, historically, the Conservative Friends of groups were established with countries that were friendly with Britain.
Footage of a bustling garden party.
In August 2012, Tory activists launched the Conservative Friends of Russia at a well-attended party at the Russian embassy, as seen in their promotional film. Sergei Nalobin was at the event.
Never before has there been a Friends of Russia, and we should all be extremely proud that we've played a part in the establishment of the first ever Friends of Russia on the British political scene.
The Conservative Friends of Russia was backed by prominent figures in the Tory party, including the MPs Nigel Evans, Robert Buckland, and John Whittingdale. Its honorary president was the former Foreign and Defence Secretary, Sir Malcolm Rifkin.
The members of the Conservative Friends of Russia were defending the argument that we should engage more with Russia and reset relations. But afterwards, we realised that there may have been slightly more sinister reasons for the group to be set up.
Strippers, spies, and Russian money #dispatches.
2 weeks after the Conservative Friends of Russia was launched, some of the group went on a trip there, organized by the Russian government.
It was presented to me as a visit by the young political leaders from the UK, plus some journalists, to go to Moscow and St. Petersburg, all expenses paid. Many saw themselves as prospective parliamentary candidates for the party. We had Richard Royal, who was the head of the Conservative Friends of Russia, Peter Cuthbertson, Carl Thompson, and Theodora Clark, who has since become an MP for the Conservative Party.
Also on the trip was Matthew Elliott.
Good morning, Mr. Elliott.
A founder of the right-wing pressure group Taxpayers Alliance, and later chief executive of the Brexit Vote Leave campaign.
I've actually got the schedule here entitled Visit of the Young Political Leaders from Great Britain. We had a meeting at the State Duma where a photo was taken of us all standing on the steps.
Footage from the trip.
We visited a bar in St. Petersburg. Some did appear to just want to go and have a good time. We all had a good time, but some went that one step beyond.
Several people on the trip have spoken to us about what happened one night.
The Russians suggested a sort of strip club style venue where girls would be scantily dressed, serving drinks, doing who knows what. I demurred, as did others, but I believe that planted an idea in the minds of some of the group, including Richard Royal and Peter Cuthbertson.
The two aspiring Tory MPs went along with the Russians. Exactly what happened in the club remains unclear.
It seemed to me at the time that their behaviour was risky, if not actually quite reckless and naive. I can't be 100% certain that this was a classic compromat operation. Looking back, I do find it highly suspicious.
The term is compromat for a reason. It's compromising material.
Michael Weiss works for a pro-democracy organization that's banned in Russia.
So they might trap you this way, and then at a later date, spring it on you that, oh, by the way, you know, we've got this tape of you in the strip club or this tape of you in the hotel room, you know, having a good time. And now that you've got a political career, either you come work for us and do what we ask, or we ruin your life personally and professionally. This was at best an influence operation and at worst, a clearinghouse for espionage.
Russia will use whatever it takes to recruit sources which it regards as potentially valuable to itself, and that can range anything from financial compromise, sexual compromise, to other forms of more subtle influence.
Former MI6 officer Christopher Steele.
Richard Royal said, the Conservative Friends of Russia was set up independently by friends with an interest in Russian history and politics. There was no external influence from the Russian embassy or individuals linked to it in the establishment of the group. There was no sinister intent or undue influence from the Russian state. It is not true that the hosts took members of the group to a strip club, nor did they organize or suggest any such event. Peter Cuthbertson did not respond to a request for comment.
Footage from the House of Commons, 14th of June 2010.
This, the scandalous suppression of the media, the murder of journalists, the imprisoning of dissidents, and the regular use of torture by the police and in prisons, it is a pretty heavy indictment of the Russian leadership.
In 2012, Chris Bryant was the chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Russia. He was a long-standing critic of Putin.
It was pretty clear that the Russian embassy was trying to organize to get rid of me. I started being told by Conservative MPs, oh, the embassy isn't happy that you're chair of the group because you're gay and because you're a critic of Putin, and they want you out.
Shortly after the trip to Moscow, the Conservative Friends of Russia began criticizing his leadership of the APPG, accusing him of incompetence. On its website, it posted a picture from an earlier newspaper story showing Chris Bryant in his underwear.
Conservative Friends of Russia started running a pretty insidious, nasty campaign against me. What shocked me was that prominent British conservatives were going to attack me over my sexuality to protect the Russian state.
The group's honorary president, Sir Malcolm Rifkin, swiftly resigned, saying he was unhappy with the way people were behaving. He said the attack on Chris Bryant was the final straw. He told us within a few days of the Conservative Friends of Russia being set up, it became clear that those running it had an unhealthy, close relationship with the Russian embassy.
This was a Russian government influence operation in the heart of London. Quite significant figures in British politics had aligned themselves with this organization. One Tory MP described them as just a gaggle of useful idiots, referring to people who don't even realize they're being manipulated by Russian interests.
Richard Royal said the group was critical of Chris Bryant's chairmanship, but no comment was ever made nor intimated about Mr. Bryant's sexuality. The group accepted that it was wrong to reuse the photo in question and offered an apology to Mr. Bryant that he publicly accepted. There was no involvement of the Russian embassy or any external influence during this episode.
2013, Marina Litvinenko sitting on a park bench, looking reflective.
My husband Sasha tried to say, pay attention. Putin and people around him are very dangerous.
Almost 7 years after Alexander Litvinenko's murder, his widow, Marina, was campaigning for a public inquiry into his death. His inquest had stalled after the government denied the coroner access to secret intelligence about Russian involvement.
Public inquiry, it was only way to get justice. We were waiting for decision.
While Marina waited, the Tory party held its annual summer fundraising ball. David Cameron, Theresa May, and Mayor of London Boris Johnson mingled with the wealthy guests. Among them, influential Russians, including Vasily Shestakov, a Russian MP and Putin ally.
This was a Shestakov, as a guy who wrote a book together with Vladimir Putin about judo.
Marina says she'd been warned that the Tories' efforts to improve relations with Russia might stand in the way of getting justice for her husband.
Some senior politician told me, Marina, you should be preparing for your case might be just slowed down because Conservative Party is looking for better relationship to Russia state. You have to be ready for this.
It's nearly 7 years since her husband was killed, but for Marina Litvinenko, there is still no justice.
3 weeks after the summer ball, the government made its decision on the Litvinenko case.
The British government refused the coroner's own plea for a public inquiry.
I still have a very long way to get justice. But now, how does it look? It looks like a very political decision what happened today. I almost cried. I just couldn't understand why.
Home Secretary Theresa May said international relations were a factor in the decision not to hold a public inquiry, and an inquest was more readily explainable to our foreign partners.
Conservatives decide to do with Putin in a good relationship. I think this was a huge mistake and political disaster not to understand who is front of you.
After Marina appealed, the High Court overruled the government's decision. The public inquiry later concluded that Alexander Litvinenko was murdered by two Russian agents in an operation probably approved by President Putin.
When you're an elected representative of a liberal democracy, one of your foremost responsibilities is national security. When you turn a blind eye to this malign behavior, you're in derogation of your duty as an elected representative. And that's how liberal democracies become degenerate. And Putin knows this.
This is sovereign Ukrainian territory. These were not Ukrainian troops.
In 2014, Vladimir Putin illegally annexed Crimea. Once again, the British government's response would reveal its hesitancy in checking his ambitions.
You always lost if you tried to please Putin, and you never will win.
Hashtag dispatches. Strippers, spies, and Russian money. Hashtag dispatches.
This morning, the occupation moved from airports and military installations into the center of the Crimean capital itself. Local authorities here have confirmed they are Russians.
In February 2014, Russia invaded Ukraine illegally, seizing control of Crimea and backing breakaway regions in the east of the country. Britain and the rest of the EU imposed sanctions on Russia. But when the Ukrainian government asked for weapons to defend their country, the British government refused to supply them, instead offering training and equipment.
We didn't arm the Ukrainians after 2014, and my strong suspicion would be that one of the reasons for that was because of the influence of effectively pro-Russian or pro-regime operators and facilitators in the UK.
Looking back, it is clear the reaction was inadequate, that the reaction was too soft. Did we go slow? Did we go soft in the Security Council because we didn't want to take on Russia, because we were susceptible to Russian influence?
Simon MacDonald was one of Britain's top diplomats in Europe. This is his first in-depth interview about Britain's relationship with Russia.
In 2014, we weren't as tough as we should have been when Russia annexed Crimea. But that problem, that inadequate reaction, was general to the West.
After the invasion of Crimea, there was growing concern about money flowing into the Tory coffers from Russia-linked donors. The Conservatives had accepted nearly £1 million between David Cameron's election and the end of 2014.
It's not about somebody saying, here, I'm giving you some money and I want a favour in return, but it is that gently it starts to blunt your understanding of the motives which others may have in bankrolling your political party.
I know that there was agonizing about some of these donations within the Conservative Party. I had conversations with people who were very aware of the optics, who were unhappy about the optics, but the key fact is they said yes.
While British politicians were accepting money from Russia-linked donors, government officials in the US were taking a tough approach to Russia and its oligarchs.
The US Treasury Department slammed 7 Russian oligarchs and 17 Russian government officials with sanctions on Friday.
One of those sanctioned was billionaire and Putin ally Oleg Deripaska. The US government said he'd been reportedly identified as one of the individuals holding assets and laundering funds on behalf of the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, claims Deripaska vigorously denies. His US assets, reportedly worth millions of dollars, were frozen. It also sanctioned EN Plus, the multi-billion dollar company he controlled.
So after Deripaska was put on the US sanctions list, it created a crisis for Deripaska personally, but also for his companies. Basically, if you're an international businessman and you own assets across the world if you have bank accounts across the world, if you have international investments, and you get put on the U.S. sanctions list, at that moment in time, your life becomes absolutely miserable. Almost every bank in the world will close their accounts with you because they don't want to be in violation of U.S. Treasury sanctions. Everything gets frozen in place. It's devastating to be put on the U.S. sanctions list.
But help for Deripaska's embattled company would come from the heart of the British establishment. EN Plus's chairman was the peer, Lord Barker of Battle. With no sanctions imposed on Deripaska or his company by the UK, Lord Barker was in a position to help.
In my opinion, the reason why a Russian oligarch would have hired a British lord as the chairman of his company is to add some gravitas and legitimacy. There wasn't much that anyone could do to get Deripaska himself taken off the sanctions list. But Deripaska basically asked Lord Barker to use his influence to try to get his company, EN Plus, off of the sanctions list.
Bill Browder.
US Department of Justice filings reveal the extent to which Lord Barker used his position to lobby for Deripaska's sanctioned company using a US public affairs firm. His official title, Lord Barker, appears in nearly 100 documents relating to the campaign to help EN Plus. The strategy to get the sanctions lifted even carried his name. It was called the Barker Plan. It proposed Deripaska giving up his controlling interest, as well as an overhaul of the board.
To have an active lawmaker use his position, this is a shameful blot on the British political system and the parliamentary system.
The outcome was that EN Plus was taken off the U.S. Treasury sanctions list.
Oleg Deripaska kept a 45% stake in EM Plus and was still the largest single shareholder, but the US sanctions on him remained. EN Plus paid Lord Barker a bonus of £3 to £4 million. Lord Barker said, "I resigned from the EM Plus board following the invasion of Ukraine last year. It is wrong to say that it was lobbying that led to the lifting of US sanctions. If anyone seriously thinks that US policymakers can be swayed just by an English title, they've clearly been watching too much Downton Abbey. The success of my corporate restructuring plan was a direct result of a serious and groundbreaking package of hard measures to remove Mr. Deripaska from control of the business. I work closely, transparently, with the US Treasury on behalf of the international shareholders. As a direct result, he not only lost control, but also suffered a personal financial loss running to several billion dollars." Lord Barker isn't the only peer who's been linked to Putin's oligarchs. We've established that since 2014, a further 8 members of the House of Lords from across the political spectrum have worked for Russian companies or firms part-owned by Putin-linked oligarchs.
Peers need to be mindful of Russia's agenda, of the idea that Russia can use their involvement to improve its own reputation. Russia doesn't do anything for free and doesn't do anything by accident.
As Russia launched another deadly attack on British soil,
this appears to have been a state-sponsored assassination attempt.
Some senior politicians were facing up to the threat Putin posed.
We were watching a deteriorating relationship and a growing threat, and that's what prompted the inquiry.
Hashtag dispatches.
In Westminster, there was growing concern about Russian interference in British politics. Parliament's powerful Intelligence and Security Committee launched an inquiry into the scale of Russia's activity against the UK.
We wanted to look at the Russian threat in its entirety. The fact that Russia was investing large amounts of money through its oligarchs and people who had a foot both in the United Kingdom and in Russia was clearly a matter of interest from the outset.
As MPs investigated Russia's attempts to undermine our democracy, there was another reminder of the threat the Kremlin posed.
Aerial footage of a Salisbury housing estate.
This appears to have been a state-sponsored assassination attempt. This an investigation with some unlikely locations, but a predictable suspect.
A Russian former double agent, Sergei Skripal, was targeted in an attack using the nerve agent Novichok. He and his daughter survived, but a British woman was killed.
Should there be no credible response, we will conclude that this action amounts to an unlawful use of force by the Russian state against the United Kingdom.
Sergei and Yulia Skripal, you know, poisoned with a military-grade nerve agent manufactured in Russia. Why do they think they could do that and get away with it? Because they'd gotten away with Litvinenko before that, right? And what did the British government do for that? Papered it over.
It was against this backdrop that the Intelligence and Security Committee took evidence.
My evidence was that Russia was becoming an increasing rogue state, that it wasn't being properly deterred, that it operated not just through state organs, but through business and through civil society.
The evidence I gave was that there is a large group of British professionals, politicians, lawyers, PR firms, private investigators who are paid by Russian oligarchs on behalf of the Russian government to influence British political outcomes.
The findings of the committee were damning.
The conclusion of the report is that Russia is a significant threat to the United Kingdom and its allies. And I have to say, in light of what's now been happening since last February in the Ukraine, a capacity to generate conditions which could lead to war.
But when it was submitted to the Prime Minister for sign-off, Boris Johnson delayed its publication.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to ask an urgent question of the Minister on the refusal of the Prime Minister to give clearance to the Intelligence and Security Committee of Parliament's report on Russia.
The unclassified version was uncomfortable reading for the British government. The report says in terms that Russia was trying to influence British politics and that the government had been laggardly in reacting to that possibility. So at the least, the report was embarrassing to the government.
The report warned that political figures were vulnerable to influence operations from Russia-linked donors. Separately, the year before, the Conservatives had faced questions about their fundraising in Russia. They centered around Ehud Shelegh, a Conservative Party treasurer.
Ehud Shelegh suddenly started making very large donations to the Conservative Party.
In 2018, he was reportedly the Tory party's largest individual donor, giving them £1.3 million. The following year, he was knighted.
He came to the UK in the 90s from Israel, set up a string of fairly small businesses. His nickname was Alka-Seltzer because he dissolved so many companies. We found that he had a record of racking up large debts, particularly tax bills, and dissolving the companies that had incurred those bills and moving on, which might prompt you to think, well, hang on a minute, should this kind of character be the treasurer of anything, never mind the Tory party?
Labour MP Stephen Kinnock has a close interest in Russia, having worked there for 3 years. He too had questions about Shelegh's background.
I was very concerned about Mr. Shelegh's connections to certain actors in Russia, and also about the unclear source of his wealth.
He wrote to the chair of the Conservative Party, Brandon Lewis, to raise these concerns.
Stephen Kinnock.
So this is the letter that I received from Brandon Lewis. I want to make clear that you're effectively accusing Mr. Schelleck of being under the influence of, or indeed working for, a foreign agent. I would encourage you to consider any accusations you are making against an individual carefully so as not to risk libel. Rather than treating my concerns seriously from the point of view of national security, he dismisses all of that, and I found that deeply disappointing.
In 2020, Sir Ehud made a £10,000 political donation to Brandon Lewis. In total, he's given £3.5 million to the Conservatives. In 2021, Barclays Bank alerted the UK authorities to a large donation by Sir Ehud. A bank suspicious activity report said the donation was potentially illegal. Investigative journalist Jane Bradley was tipped off about the report.
What it did was flag a donation of £450,000 made by Ehud Schelleg to the Conservative Party back in 2018. Now, the report said that while Schelleg declared that the money came from him, bank investigators believe the money did secretly come from a Russian bank account of his father-in-law, a guy called Sergei Kopitov.
Sergei Kopitov held senior government positions in Crimea and Ukraine when the president was the pro-Kremlin Viktor Yanukovych.
The payment began as a transfer of $2.5 million from Kopitov's Russian bank account. Bank investigators said the money had bounced around multiple bank accounts, going through Austria, going to the Isle of Man, an offshore account there, back into the UK, and then to the Tory party bank account. My source was really concerned that this donation was an attempt to influence UK government policy, and they were especially concerned because of what was happening in Ukraine at the time.
Jane Bradley's source suspected that the transaction was a breach of UK electoral law. Legally, donors need to be on the electoral roll, and political parties must check their identity.
My jaw hit the floor. Mr. Kopitov is not on the electoral roll. So the question is, was Mr. Schelleg a proxy for money that was coming from Russia and ultimately finding its way into the Conservative Party? If there are individuals who are connected to what is clearly a hostile foreign actor, namely the Russian government, then we need to know about that.
Sergei Kopitov's lawyers have previously said he is not a Russian ally. After Crimea was annexed, he lost his civil servant job, his assets were nationalized, and he has never made a donation to a UK political party. Sir Ehud's lawyers said the success of his businesses in the last 20 years dwarfs previous companies' liabilities. He's not connected to Russian influence, and in particular in British politics. Suspicious activity reports are not a demonstration of wrongdoing. He categorically rejects any suggestion Mr. Kopitov's cash gift to his daughter was intended as a political donation. This gift was used to repay a loan to Sir Ehud from his family trust. Sir Ehud then took another loan from the trust, unconnected to the gift, and donated some of it to the Conservatives. The Electoral Commission says the Tory party committed no offence over Sir Ehud's donation. The National Crime Agency said political donations by British citizens are permitted even if the funds derived from a gift from an overseas individual. The Conservatives have taken almost £5 million from Russia-linked donors since 2010, far more than any other mainstream political party.
I think fundraising remains, and the purchasing of influence remains an Achilles heel in the workings of our parliamentary democracy.
I think it would be fair to say that the Conservative Party's due diligence of donors has not been particularly credible or impressive. We need to have a far stricter due diligence process surrounding donations, and that due diligence process actually should involve the security service, frankly.
The Conservative Party said We do not accept foreign donations. They are illegal. Donations are properly and transparently declared to the Electoral Commission and comply fully with the law. This Conservative government has been resolute in standing up to Russian aggression following the Salisbury attack. We led and coordinated the largest collective expulsion of Russian intelligence officers in history. We have led international efforts to support Ukraine against Russia's illegal war, imposing the largest and most severe package of sanctions that Russia has ever seen, committing over £4 billion of military support to Ukraine. Channel 4's suggestion that we have somehow failed to act against Russia is patently false and utterly risible. The Russian embassy didn't comment on any of the allegations in this film.
Footage showing a plume of smoke rising up over a Ukrainian city, then a destroyed apartment building.
As the war in Ukraine continues, many believe the Conservative Party still needs to account for its dealings with Russia and the extent to which they emboldened Putin in the years that led up to the invasion.
The writing was on the wall in letters 50 foot high about what Putin would do if we didn't take strong action in 2014 and if we didn't deal with the financial corruption from Russian money in the UK system. But it took the second invasion and the brutality of, you know, so many mass murders for people really to wake up to it.
Russian money has eaten quite deeply into the British elite, the British establishment, and has affected the way in which we've responded to certain things as a result. And that is regrettable.